Me too.
Welcome back to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Collard. Special week, special guest. We're here in the international headquarters of Snap Clarity and Terrace. We got a special guest, Terry Story, the CEO and founder of Terrace and Snap Clarity. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Eric.
So tell us how this all got started all those years ago.
Well, I first started many years ago, over 15 years ago. And I was, back then to describe it, we have what's called treatment homes across the province, and they were all government kind of run agencies back then. And so what happened was it all went private. So I just kind of lucked out as I was graduating. Mental health care was going private for youth. So I kind of just jumped on that bandwagon and I opened my first treatment home at 22 for girls sexually abused. And that it kind of like, I think, snowballed from that up to, I think, 2 years ago, I had 13 treatment homes across the province for youth. Now I only have 7, but I'd had 13 then. And so from then, I think what happened was we were kind of feeling that mental health was getting more complex and that the public system just couldn't meet the needs at that point. So we felt like if we had a youth come in with really complex behaviors, we'd be waiting over 12 to 18 months to get any specialized service. So we decided as an agency, we needed to kind of like figure out how we're going to like fix this for these youth, right? So we kind of built this system internally that we had a psychiatrist that came on with us. And we started to hire a clinical team and we kind of worked with a really trauma focused based program doing that. And we found that we could actually solve problems very quickly. So using this really incredible collaborative approach. Kind of makes sense?
Yeah,
right? So we then were like, we were kind of getting unaware of kind of even what was happening out in the communities and stuff around mental health, just because we had built our own incredible system. So when we finally then started to kind of look at what was happening out in the communities and that CHEO and, you know, Sick Kids in Toronto were having wait lists and that 3,000 kids were showing up for youth mental health, we felt at that point, let's just build our own system. And not only just build our system, we actually wanted to like create what we thought was what was called a flow. So we had the streamlined flow that was working. And so we wanted to be able to like kind of test that more out in a facility. And also we also were looking at potentially an online platform that we could reach to everything. But we first had to validate this system flow that we call it here, which is basically doing accurate assessments and then putting the person with the right skill set. And I'll explain that kind of more, right? So we developed, you know, we had our bricks and mortar, we kind of opened up and we put it to the community. And we were able to, like, within 2 years of Terrace Wellness, have 1,500 clients come in, right? We were able to validate a flow system, meaning that instead of people waiting and waiting for services, we'd call up, we would triage them. So we'd do this accurate mental health assessment and then we would we'd match them to the perfect skill set. That could be therapy, that could be psychiatry, that could be, you know, and we'd actually have goals based that were like actionable everyday goals that would be working. And in 12 weeks, we'd see optimum outcomes of like 86% improvement.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So what kind of, because again, mental health, you're right, is very complex now.
Very complex.
It's changed. Well, again, I'm not a mental health professional, but from what I've seen, it's changed a lot in the last 20 years, I would say. So what kind of problems or symptoms do you deal with on a day-to-day basis?
So good question, right? Because it has changed and it's kind of good for people to know, is that if I look back at my early days of my career, some of the youth that I was working with, even people, right? It was, we could kind of, what I always say, we could see and touch and kind of feel them. You kind of, they were acting out in school. We could see those behaviors and address that very quickly. Well, now the typical profile that we're seeing, right, is actually people who are functionable. So it's actually people that are going to work every day, kids that are going to school every day. They're actually engaged, meaning that they're in activities, right? And they're going to school, you know, the people are working out. So it's not the typical things that we saw 20 years ago. we're seeing this profile come in that's functionable. And what happens is that anxiety is the number one issue that we're seeing come into this clinic.
And how does that manifest itself?
Well, again, that is a complex answer,
yeah.
But
oh yeah,
so
I always
for
like
sure,
to break it down
for but, sure. And yeah. I, you know, let's go back to that one in a minute. But I think what happens is if I go back to that when I talked about the current flow of the system, that it's really kind of like it's challenging. People, right? There's different access of service, different levels of service, different levels of access of how you get into it out in the community. So what happens, I'll give that example. If we have something like anxiety, and if you don't have early intervention, what happens is it just compounds. And then by the time you get to the specialist appointment, right, it's now in a crisis mode, where if you could deal with anxiety right at the early intervention, you'd have different outcomes. So that's the complexity, right, is that we just have people that are trying to go through a system that takes a long time. And if you don't deal with anxiety right head on at the beginning, that's what happens.
It's funny because most people, and I think the mental health movement has done a pretty good job of educating people, especially over the last 5 years. A lot of people look at having a broken arm. You can see the broken arm. You can treat the broken arm. It's very easy.
Yeah.
Well, if someone has a mental health issue, you don't always see it. You don't. It's not always easy to diagnose. So how do you deal with these complex cases?
So again, that's always good because I think that's the whole kind of thing that's kind of happening right now. So we have all this awareness and education, and I always tell people, and we're spending so much money on awareness and education, which is incredible, but it's not changing outcomes. The outcomes haven't changed. We still have 1 in 5 people are suffering with mental health. Only 60% of that, like 80% of those people are not getting the proper treatment, right? So, and it's costing the economy $51 billion, right? 500,000 people a week miss work, right? So it's just, the numbers are staggering, right? It is like having a huge impact on the
Do you think mental health
country.
Is one of the biggest issues these days?
Absolutely. And I think that we have a system that's just unable to meet the needs at this moment and the prevalence of the needs, meaning that it's increasing, right? And so in the experience level that's out there. Right?
And you're dealing a lot with youth, obviously. That's your specialty.
For sure.
And from what I hear, and again, I'm not an expert like you, but are I guess it's a little tougher being a teen these days, but how does that manifest itself into the symptoms that you're seeing?
Well, again, two-point question. So if I look, we do all ages now at the Wellness Center, but we definitely, you're right, specialized at the beginning in the youth. But again, we have to treat the whole family.
Yeah.
So, and again, it goes back to that question that you asked me around this anxiety issue, right? That it's actually everyone walking around that's functional, right? It's not, I think people have this idea of mental health that you're in bed or you're bipolar or schizophrenic. Again, that's 1%, right? So that's not the population that is most at risk for like suicide at this moment and other things that are happening. So it's actually, again, this functional person that are going from A to Z. So the second question you asked me about how come it's doing that, I think when we talk about youth and what's changed in the past 20 years is that we have youth that I call this generation that's very all about parenting that goes back to what I call helicopter parenting, right? So I think we're seeing youth with very low self-esteem that have to always be out in social media. They always have to be, they have kind of superficial friends, right? They're kind of missing attachment with their parents. And most of their world is based on a mobile, right? And everything that they do is on display. And we also have this parenting style where parents are over-involved and over-indulging their children, right, to be extremely child-focused. But it's kind of like coming back at us to be like, right? So what happens is at 16, 17, or even younger, they do not have the skills to be able to make decisions because they haven't had to. Right? They've been bailed out of every single scenario. If they fail a math test, mom's coming in to say like, hey, what didn't the teacher do right? Right? So there's this lack of accountability. And so on youth around that. So I find what's happened is now we have these youth that were very functional, doing very well in school, going from A to Z. And I use that as a great example. It's like they're functioning, they're at school, the parents think all is well. And the next minute they're walking in saying, I just want to die. and they are really, right?
And we don't talk about mental health in school.
Well, actually, you know, that's the difference. All the kids are talking about it. So
yeah, I'm talking about the curriculum.
For sure. Yeah. So yeah, right, the curriculum is right. But the thing is with these youth, actually, they are so open about it. They're like, they'll cry. I mean, they will put it right out there for you. If you ask them if they're suicidal, they'll say, yes, I am. I mean, they're not holding back. I think what, again, it comes back to is this, like, this mobile issue and social media, that there's just no boundaries, right? Yeah. And I find it when I'm speaking with these youth, or even now as their employer, right, is that they just lack this boundary issue, that if they want something right now, they want it right now. And they will have, you know, they won't be able to manage with the idea that they can't have it right now, right? And then they don't know how to deal with that. And then it leads to, like, I'm going to kill myself today, right? And so, and then they really become like that. So it's complex, right? There's a whole bunch of issues, I think, that have got us here.
You bring up a good point about the mobile issue, because I think it is, even for adults, it's an issue. We're dependent on this little thing called a mobile phone. But you came up with a mobile as part of the solution. Can you tell me a bit more about Snap Clarity?
Yeah, so Snap Clarity, again, so if I go back to the Wellness Center, we created this flow system that is like one accurate assessment. You're matched to the perfect and actionable goals, and then you measure outcomes at the end of that. So that's what we did. We basically took that flow and we said, now we want to offer it to a larger population, right? Basically, and you make it scalable. So that's kind of how Snap Clarity started, right? Was that we were going to be this, we wanted to change the way mental health was delivered. And I believe that mental health should be accessible to everyone, and offering different kind of models of it. So meaning that you're not always using this traditional 1 hour, that you could have different payments, different times, and it works on your kind of schedule. And we would offer text messaging and video conferencing on that. And so what's now evolved out of Snap Clarity, as you kind of work through this, what we call startup process, right? You come out as Scooby-Doo, and then, you know, within weeks of incubation, you're like, okay, we're like Ocean 11 now, right? We got it together. We kind of like, and I really like the way we pivot with that company, is that we're going to enterprise first, because I do believe that that enterprise is in the best position to help us change the way mental health is delivered here in Canada. And I believe that there's funds, when I talk about that, meaning that we have benefit packages, 75% of Canadians actually work for an employer who actually offers benefits, that only 30% of people actually use their benefits for therapy. So that's a big amount of money that we have sitting there that's untapped for mental health. So we need to like get people engaged to be able to use that money. And we think by offering this to enterprise, to be able to say, let's start engaging your employees to actually use therapy, because we know it works. And again, when I talk about that, is actually going back to the accurate assessment, right? Match with the good skills, the perfect skill set for your needs at that time, and then measuring data over time, right? So we can actually, on that initial assessment that's being done, we can actually test outcomes every 90 days on that initial assessment that's based on life functions, meaning your ability to work, your productivity, that kind of stuff, which is good information to have. And then my ultimate goal is to actually start working with benefit plans to be able to offer the right insurance package to employers. So, you know, that I believe, you look at Starbucks, look at Manulife, they're now, you know, Starbucks is offering $5,000. Manulife is offering $10,000. We believe that $5,000 is this magic number, right, that employers should be offering employees. So now with good data, and employers willing to put this money in because of all the things that they'll save and getting engagement, it'll actually save the economy $2.2 billion if we just start with enterprise, right? In mental health, is that it will like start to change the way it's delivered, right? And the outcomes that we're going to have because of this. And I think we will see insurance start to either, or people will start to just look elsewhere for different kind of benefit packages. And we're seeing that happen all over the world. Insurance is being disrupted, right?
And I guess for most people, especially people of my age, we see therapists in the movies. You're sitting on the couch; it's an hour, and you're basically trying to, you know, turn that on its head.
Well,
are you fighting a big fight?
No, I never want to actually like, because I think traditional therapy is needed. So that's not it. Just again, the needs are so huge. Right, in North America, around this, we're looking 1 in 5. And some people would actually argue that to be like 4 to 5, right? So I think when you kind of look at that, there's room for everything. We just need to have different delivery models, right? options for people.
Yeah. Is this Snap Clarity almost like becoming the Uber of mental health?
Well, you can definitely, it's a plot, right? Yeah. For sure, right? When you kind of look at it. But I know Snap Clarity, part of my vision was always to change the way mental health is. So, and I'm passionate about it. So I like where we pivot. I like that we're going after enterprise and working with them to create these. Because if you're getting to employers and employees, you're getting to families and, right? And managing, you know, working with them. So, it's kind of like, you know, our next version will be different, but that version right now is part of our kind of mission.
How can someone, let's say I'm a teen, I'm in Ontario and yep. I need help. How do I access either your services or services that I need?
Well, there's, again,
in the mental health field.
For sure. Yeah. So I guess, and that is part of some of the parent struggle, right? Is trying to navigate those waters. Anyone trying to, that's a difficult water to navigate for anybody. So that parents could, like, again, now there is e-mental health, so people can get on and look in your area and find out, like, what local resources are, you know, who they can call for kind of referral systems. Or somewhere like us, people just call up directly or email us or, like, set an appointment, and then we, you know, do that very quickly. But again, if you look back at the system, it can be complicated. And we tell parents sometimes, you know, the when you look at kind of the flow, the current flow of the, not our system, but the community system, is most people end up at their doctors, their MD, right?
Yeah. And I know enough MDs to know that most of those people are not qualified. Or they just—it's not like it's not their tool set. It's not—they're not bad people, but it's just
for sure, right?
I mean, the same thing with nutrition. I mean, there are some doctors that can talk about nutrition. The most part, they're like, "Go see someone else."
I got 12 minutes, yeah, right? Yeah, like yeah, I got like yeah, yeah, right.
Do you have a broken bone? No, then I can't help you. So
and so, you know, bringing that up is that's the so 85% of people walking into clinics, like doctors and stuff, is for mental health. Is the number one driver of that, right? So I think that. What happens is that when I talk about accurate assessments is the number one thing, right? So awareness and education doesn't change outcomes, right? It's actually accurate assessments. So what happens in clinics or like doctors, MDs, it's just people end up getting subpar treatment in mental health. It's not that people can't, it's because of time. It's time consuming, right? You need to ask the right questions, right directions, because it all kind of looks the same at some points, right, on initial triage. So you really have to break it down about what's actually going on so you could put it in the right hands of the next step, right?
We're going to switch gears a little bit. In terms of, you talked a little bit about awareness and all that stuff, and a big campaign.
Yes.
Recently it's been Bell Let's Talk.
Yep.
And do you think that's helping the sector?
Yes.
And how is that helping?
I just think Bell has done an incredible job at awareness and stigma, right? They're able to, like, you know, and not only are they able to raise a lot of money and they help incredible causes, right? But it's a day that actually Bell has done a very incredible job of, like, really isolating that day, getting people involved, bringing people out to speak about it and awareness, because which is the first step, right? Is that there's people aren't alone, right?
Do you think the stigma's still there?
With mental health?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I think that when I look at it and when I'm learning more about enterprise in it, yes. Like, I think, like, how come only 30% of people engage in their benefit package to get therapy? Right? That's really surprised me. That number was so low. And it's because people are really nervous or scared that if they ask for, like, you know, that number to call, even though it's all confidential, they're still scared, like, oh, my boss will find out, I'll get fired, right? There's so many compliance issues around it and disability that employers are like, I don't want to hear about it either, right? So there is this stigma because there's so many laws around discrimination and mental health, that there's no balancing yet, right, of how we kind of start to incorporate it in schools and in companies.
It's I mean, I can tell you from my own personal experience. I've chatted with about. I've actually blogged about it because I found that was the easiest way for me to get out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've gotten some great feedback. It was still very scary for me.
Yes.
And it all happened because a friend of mine took his own life.
Yes.
And
yeah.
There was
yeah,
a lot of
for sure situation. Yep.
It's. I still think there was I don't want to say huge stigma. I think a lot of the initiatives, including Bell Let's Talk, is really helping. But I still think we're where we want to be, especially in the corporate world. I think because again, especially if you know someone's off for mental health, and it's like a couple bad apples always kind of. There's a couple people who are like, well, I don't feel well. I'm gonna take like this week off, and then they abuse the system. There's always gonna be those people, and then they ruin it for a lot of because there are a lot of people that have issues and they need to work it out. I mean. there's like the, there's the two extremes. There's, you know, my mom's generation or her parents' generation. It's like, suck it up, buttercup.
For sure. You made your red liner.
Yeah. And that, I don't think that's any better. And now it's like, there's some people who are the total opposite, where it's like, well, you're not feeling well today, just stay in bed. And then, you know, it's like, where's the middle ground? Do you see both sides of the coin?
Yeah, I think part of the issue is that mental health has always been around, right? The numbers aren't changing, right? We're seeing more, I guess,
Is there more diagnosis? Because we're definitely talking about it more than we did.
Well, because, of course, that's the education awareness part, right? So everyone's talking about it more. So I think, again, that it's complex, right? I think that people, I believe in, because here at the Wellness, I believe in a collaborative approach. So we actually believe in what's called medical, psychosocial, and self-help, right? Those are three categories that we look at, that, and people need all of it at one point potentially, right? So I don't say, oh, psychiatry is no good, psychosocial, I believe you need a treatment plan. So, and the problem is with the system, what scares people, I think most people who've gotten to the point of potentially taking their lives or thinking about it have actually thought about ways to get help, but it's so complicated, and they hear the stories out there and what it's like, and that's why I created this, right? That is depressing within itself. So if you imagine if you had to go through these wait lists, like if you actually, like I've actually drawn out the current system. I mean, like if you end up at your doctor's office, they make a referral. That could be 6 months to a specialty. And then if you get into that, they do their own intake, not even knowing what the doctor could have said, two lines. Oh, check out the anxiety. They're doing an assessment. And if you don't meet that criteria, you're back to square one again. Or they say, oh, now we're going to move you on to this specialty that actually can deal with that. Now we're talking another 8 or 9 months and another intake process that's a screening tool. So you're not measuring any data. How do people measure success, right? So that's the mental health system. Think of somebody could call up and actually just go to therapy probably within a few days. You could call up a therapist and say, I want to see you. But again, it takes 4 appointments on average to get a treatment plan. So by then people are just like, done, you don't get it, yeah. Right? And the most interesting thing we did was we were at One Young World at the end of 2016. We created this map that was actually pretty easy. You could ping yourself where you're from, like say you're from China. You know, we asked people when they ping themselves live, what mental health access was in their country or their city or where they're from. And everywhere around the world, from Austria to China to Iran to like Ottawa to Toronto, is like people weren't saying money, that they were saying access and experience. So again, even if you got access, did you get the right person to meet your skill set? Yeah. Right? That you weren't walking to someone that couldn't deal with anxiety or doesn't know anything about mood disorder. So again, you're starting from zero. Yeah. So that is part of the issue, is that people need to feel like they can do an accurate assessment quickly and get matched to somebody who can actually work with what you need at that point. Yeah. Right? Make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. It sounds like we could talk about this all night, and I know you're a very busy lady and we need to move on. But two things before we go. What can someone do if they foresee changes in their mental health? And you talked about self-help. Is there anything that someone, like, I'm at home, I'm listening to this podcast, how can I help myself?
I talked about this with self-help, right? I think there's some really great apps out there right now. Headspace is amazing, right?
Love it.
Anxiety. And I truly believe, and I've been doing trauma work for 15 years, is that mindfulness is the key to kind of recovery. And it can actually rewire the brain, right? And I get that people aren't going to go to 90-minute yogas or they're not going to do that. There's things you can do in 3 minutes a day that will actually change your way of like getting your mind to be grounded and relaxed.
Like what?
So let's talk about Headspace. Yeah. I always use an app called Stop, Breathe, and Think.
Okay.
So it's 3 minutes. So let's say if I'm like really anxious or getting overwhelmed by things, I can listen to that for 3 minutes and come out and feel extremely grounded.
That's awesome.
And I also find that practice takes, right, if you're practicing that every day, because I think we try to do it here with youth, so that's the hardest population to sell mindfulness to, right? Yeah. And get them to buy into it.
I don't have time
for
this.
Yeah, adults can do it easy. You're like, oh, they'll try anything, right? But youth are like, what? Yeah. So we can get them on that, and we can actually show, we actually use what's called a Muse. We can actually show their improvements with mindfulness.
Yeah.
And it's incredible because they can actually see their brain activity, how many recoveries.
It's gamification now, right?
Yeah, totally, right? And we get them really involved, because I honestly believe those are things, because I think today people are in what I call flight or fight mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so it's like stepping in that garden hose, right? If you're really stressed, you're going to think you're going to have this different reaction than if you're actually in a good state of mind. And so it's like the gas pedal and the brake working together. It doesn't work together, right? You're like burning.
Yeah.
So we've got to get that mind to relax so we're able to take rational information in. And it works, right? And I know that there's not a lot of, everyone says it works, and there's not a lot of studies out there that actually show real scientific proof around
there
mindfulness.
Is. There is. They're becoming more and more
it
prevalent.
Is.
We, yeah.
Well, it's one thing that we're looking into, right? Yeah. Right now, because I believe right from even trauma to post-traumatic stress to like anxiety, we need to start to get grounded, right? And use stillness as a way of managing.
Yeah. One question I ask all my guests.
Yeah.
What does wellness mean to you?
Oh, that means like lots of things, right? I think wellness for me is everything about exercise to food to eating to happiness to abundance, right? To like, you know, having some spiritual beliefs and like, yeah, it's the whole package, right?
And where can people find out more about Snap Clarity and Terrace?
So it's, so terracewellness.com and snapclarity.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for sharing.
Thanks, sir. Yeah.
It's you can definitely tell that you're passionate about this stuff. It's nice. It's nice to have that. Not that we had a debate, but like to have that conversation.
Yes.
You've been listening to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Collard. Until next week, be well.